You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with Rick Franzi and Doug Geveller.
The Critical Mass. This is your host, Rick Franzi. I will be on the air today. My business partner, Doug Geveller, and I co-host this regularly scheduled business talk show, which airs on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday live at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And so if you're a radio show guest that's listening to this show live today, welcome and thank you for listening to our show. We have two great guests who will be coming on here shortly. Also, if you're listening to this at some point into the future via MP3 podcast from one of the many podcasting locations that air our shows, thanks for finding Critical Mass, the radio show, and listening to this installment. And I would encourage you strongly to take a look at the archives of other shows that we've done in the past. The show has been on the air for going into our 14th month now. And so quite a lot of interesting guests that we've had in the past. The catalog continues to grow. The listenership continues to expand. The Orange County business community is finding Critical Mass, the radio show, and making it a part of their business life. And our goal with this show is really to help you, our listening audience, to make better, more informed decisions. We do that by interviewing peer business owners and executives and thought leaders and people who have what Doug and I have termed transferable learning events and knowledge, such that by listening to our interviews with these people, you can make decisions with their understanding and information that they've shared with you. And that certainly can happen with the guests that we have on the show today. Our radio show is truly an extension of our 16-year business practice here in Orange County, California, where one of the things we do is build CEO peer groups for top executives and key executives and chairmen of the boards. And we do that under the brand Renaissance Executive Forums. We also have a suite of coaching services that we offer to the community. My business partner, Doug Geveller, is a master certified coach, one of less than 1,000 to have reached that level of education, training, and distinction in the entire world, and really is a transformative executive coach. And that's only one of the things that we offer in our coaching services. We help companies with strategic planning, developing vision, mission statements, and implementing them and making sure they achieve them. We also help them with employee surveys, management development, executive coaching, as I said, client peer groups. We believe that customer listening programs should be a core competency of any organization, regardless of your size. We offer a truly differentiated business experience for our members and clients. Our research shows that 80% of what you're dealing with today as an executive, it's really common, frankly, ladies and gentlemen, with other executives around the world, but certainly here in beautiful Orange County, California. If only you had the opportunity to speak with those other executives and learn from them, and they learn from you. And the radio show is a piece of how we try to make that community more connected. We do have a global international listenership, but as you know that have listened to our show before, our focus is really on the business community that exists here in Orange County, California. I'm a published author. My book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, has been called the definitive guidebook for the CEO peer group experience. I sell it on Amazon.com, and you can find it by going to our website, Critical Mass for Business, and you'll see the link there. It'll take you to the Amazon.com website. We have the opportunity to purchase it, of all things, and hopefully read it, and then contact me, and I'll be happy to sign it for you and talk with you about the explosive powers of CEO peer groups. So Doug and I are obviously big fans of what we do. We've seen it day in and day out. Just had another peer group meeting this morning with wonderful business owners in one of our groups, and really had a great time with them. They're a strong group of leaders and executives, and we had a great time together. Enough about us and our business. It's time to turn our attention to our first guest. Our first guest is Dan Leonard, and Dan is owner of Units Mobile Storage and the franchise here in Orange County, California. And Units Mobile Storage is a household and commercial storage facility serving, as I said, Orange County, California, as well as other counties here in Southern California. They are locally owned and operated, providing service to the communities from their warehouse. They're in beautiful Lake Forest, California. And Units Mobile Storage offers true innovation in the mobile storage industry, which you're going to learn more about shortly if you're not familiar with or you would like to learn more. And so let's bring Dan on and let's begin the interview today. Good afternoon, Dan, and welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Well, good afternoon.
It's good to have you on as our first guest today.
Well, thank you.
Great. Let's get started. Dan, if you could share with our audience your path to owning Units Mobile Storage here in Orange County, I would appreciate it.
All right. Well, I have spent about 39 years in banking and financial services, had a variety of executive assignments in consumer banking. I even spent some time overseas in an international banking assignment, and then in the most recent years in auto finance. My most recent corporate position was as president and CEO of an auto finance company that had been headquartered here in Southern California, and that company was sold in late 2009. But about 18 months prior to when the company was sold, the securitization market dried up and the impact on auto finance was clear that we needed a plan B. And so we kind of began to do some research on what other opportunities there might be that were different than the corporate world, and really began to look at opportunities that would allow us to stay in Orange County and have a little more control over our lives. So we did some research in franchising. I liked the idea of a franchise because it at least provided you with some business structure and hopefully a proven business model that you would be able to operate in. But the amount of information out there on franchises is a little overwhelming. We did work with a franchise broker to research some opportunities that matched our interest. And the franchise broker actually brought several opportunities to us, one of which was Units Mobile Storage. From there, we spent time researching the company. We actually took a visit to Charleston, South Carolina, which is where it's headquartered, to actually see the operation and get to know the people that were running it and so forth. And then in July of 2008, actually made the decision to buy the Orange County territory and to begin the process of setting up the business. We selected Units, I guess, Units Mobile Storage, really for several reasons. One was that the portable storage business is a relatively young industry and is still growing. With an expanding market segment, you're not necessarily having to fight over market share. You're still wanting to educate consumers about the opportunity to use portable storage, and it gives you really an opportunity to grow the business. The other advantage is that the business model is relatively straightforward, doesn't require large numbers of employees or complexity, and so that was an advantage as well that caused us to be interested in the company. And so we, as I say, we purchased the franchise in July and began the search for warehouse facilities and ordering containers and so forth, and we actually opened for business. Our first customer came to us just before Christmas in 2008. So we've been in business now since December of 2008 and continuing to grow and serve here in Orange County.
Hey, Dan, when you were talking, you used the term we pretty consistently. And so for our listening audience who may not know who we would be, I know that you're talking about your lovely wife, Judy. But could you explain for a minute how she was involved as your partner in making this decision as well?
Yes, it is referring to Judy and myself. We approached the whole process really together. The gentleman we worked with, the franchise broker, spent a lot of time talking with both Judy and I as to what our interests were. And so she's been intricately involved in all of this in terms of the decision. I'm not sure she expected to be running the office and spending all of the time that she has, but she's the organized person in our family, and so she runs the office and answers the phone and is totally involved in the business as well. The only thing I haven't let her do yet is run the forklift.
Has she driven the truck?
She has.
Excellent. I was kind of teasing, but I guess you caught me. Let's talk about Units Mobile Storage, because I know as you've given us a tour of your facility and explained the differentiation that your product and your service offers, I'd like you to share that with our listening audience, if you would, please.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned, Units is a portable storage company, so in essence, we're bringing the storage to your location. We deliver 12 or 16-foot containers to a person's location. That allows them to pack it themselves, so they load it and fill it up and lock it. And from that point, they can either keep the container on their location and use it for local storage. They can have the container moved to a new home, for example, if they're moving directly from one home to the next. Or, in addition, we provide warehouse storage here in our secure warehouse in Lake Forest, and we can move the container into our internal warehouse location and store it for them for any period of time that they might need storage. The portable storage is much cleaner than traditional storage because you have a closed container inside of a warehouse, and so we certainly see one advantage is that the it keeps the things that you have stored much cleaner and in the storage process. The UNITS stands for an acronym. You might know that in today's world, right? It's called Unique No Hassle Transportable Storage. Nobody will remember that, but It actually is a very effective way to move and store. Typical uses that we see our customers use our containers for, decluttering a home. So if people are getting ready to sell a home, getting all of the things that we accumulate over the time we own a home, getting that out of the way so that the home makes a better presentation to the prospective buyers, and hopefully then you're able to sell your home quicker. So if you store up all of those things and put them in a container, move them to the warehouse, then when you do purchase your new home, you don't have to repack them, though you just have them delivered to your new home, and it reduces some of the hassle of moving. Obviously, the straightforward application of packing up and moving directly to a new home, so having a container delivered to your home then you pack it, and then we move it to your new home where you have time to unload it at your leisure. One of the applications we see more frequently in today's environment is that there will be a time lag between when someone sells their home and when they're ready to purchase a new home. And so people will pack up the belongings on the home that they've just sold. They will store them in our warehouse, and perhaps they'll be living with family or in an apartment or something until they've purchased a new home, and then we will move their contents to the new home. People are downsizing today, so again, another application we see fairly regularly is that people have had a larger home and they are moving to a smaller home. And so they will store things that don't fit in that smaller residence, and we're more than happy to store them here in the warehouse. A couple other different kinds of usages are during a remodeling project. You may want your belongings or your furniture protected from the dust and so forth while the remodeling's going on, and so putting your belongings into a container, perhaps it will sit on your driveway during that project. But it's a good way to protect your valuables during that period of time. Similarly, if you've had a water leak or fire damage or something like that, it's a great way to protect your belongings during a restoration project. We work closely with a number of restoration companies to provide storage during a restoration project. And then we've had a few businesses who use our services for inventory and record storage and things like that. So those are kind of the the typical uses for portable storage and the added convenience of having the container delivered to you, having the time to fill it and not be pressured by, you know, having to do it all in one day or something, it provides a real convenience to the customer.
Excellent.
I think we've tried to differentiate units from our other larger competitors primarily by trying to really focus in on our customer. So it's very important to us that we establish a personal connection with the customer and understand what it is they need. Obviously, when they call us, they are probably going to talk with Judy or myself. And so they are speaking, you know, directly with the ownership, and they're not speaking to a call center or whatever. And I think that a number of our customers have given very positive feedback on that experience. The other differentiating point is that we have a very, very high quality container that is very well engineered. It's structurally sound, and again, it is a very has a very positive image to the customers, and that they know their contents are clean and safe and maintained in a very attractive ownership. And then I think the third point that we get positive feedback on really is the local ownership. I think people today appreciate doing business with businesses that they know are locally owned and part of the community and have a vested interest in the community. And so, again, that's a point that we try to emphasize. We have donated a number of containers to a charity, food drives, you know, military toy drives, even several churches have our containers. And so we've tried to emphasize our involvement in the community. And, again, I think that's a way that we can help differentiate units from our competitors.
Certainly. And, you know, you talked earlier, Dan, that the firm was launched in 2008 and the first customer came in that same year in December of 2008. Talk with our audience about what was it like that, you know, right at the beginning of what we all know is this economic slowdown, recession, call it what you will, you launched your firm. So can you talk to us about the how this reality of the changing economy has affected your business, you know, over the past 2 years?
Well, if only we had had a crystal ball at the time, right? But I guess in the category of the glass is half full, the one thing it did was it allowed us to I moved a number of our investments into cash back in the middle of the year, and so as a result, they didn't go down at the same time the stock market was going down. So I guess that was a good thing. But you know, it was a tough time to begin the business. The real estate market, particularly, has impacted us. We have had slower growth than we had originally projected. People are not moving as frequently as they used to. They aren't spending money that they had in equity on remodeling, and so those certainly were things that had an impact on our projections. We are seeing signs of that changing. Have a number of containers in recent weeks that have gone out for remodeling projects, and that we are seeing a pickup in the real estate activity. So, you know, that certainly did have an impact on the business plan. The positives, I guess, are that, you know, it did create a need for storage for people that might not have needed it before. So it does take longer today to sell a home or to you may find that you have to sell your home before you can purchase the new home, and the escrow takes time to close and so forth. So people have certainly needed storage that is a direct result of the economic slowdown, and we have actually benefited from that. We have found that people store things for a longer period of time than historically was the case based on franchises that had been in business longer. And so, you know, there are circumstances that have actually benefited us during this economic slow down, and so there are the business is somewhat resistant to some of the financial stress that we've seen. The restoration segment, we have certainly worked on developing relationships with the restoration companies, and of course that's kind of that's pretty consistent regardless of what the economic conditions are. And so that business has been important to us to maintain a kind of a consistent, set of projects that need storage.
So it sounds like in some ways it altered some of your original planning that you did in your 3- and 5-year projections, but in other ways it created some level of opportunity that you were responding to, which, you know, any successful entrepreneur will say, you got to be flexible, especially in the early years, right, Dan, to respond to the changing market.
Yeah, no, I think you said it very well. There certainly were opportunities that were there, and we tried to focus our attention on those opportunities, not get too hung up on the things that weren't turning out the way we thought they would. But there were absolutely positives as well as things that were, that were slower growth. And, we certainly have overall our business plan. We are behind our business plan or business expectations somewhat, but at the same time, considering how significant the real estate slowdown, et cetera, has been, I'm very comfortable with where we are.
Good. Well, okay, on that note, then, I'm going to ask you, Dan, why don't you talk to our audience about a current unresolved challenge facing your business, and also help us to understand, what you're thinking as possible ways to address that challenge in your business.
Well, probably the one that comes to mind is how to market your company in the electronic age. So this has been a fascinating and enjoyable learning experience, but at the same time, it's very challenging. About 80% of our customers tell us that they have found us through a web search of some kind. And certainly, most businesses are experiencing that today. Consumers rely on the web to find the services the way we once did, perhaps with the Yellow Pages. But it becomes very challenging to determine how to spend your marketing dollars to best promote yourself on the Internet in such a way that customers see you. So choosing the right amount of marketing expenditure in the area of search engine optimization, so how do you enhance your opportunity to show up in the organic search categories of the search engine so that customers see you? You supplement that with pay-per-click advertising that hopefully will get you seen when they might not have noticed you in the organic search, doing banner advertising in some of the Internet search engines. And then more recently is how to utilize the social media, Facebook and Twitter and so forth, in such a way that it also promotes your business. So those are relatively new challenges. They work off of many of the same principles that marketing dollars have the decisions that have had to be met. But there is an abundance of information out there or data that is out there. But it's very hard to tie it into what resulted in that customer who actually booked a container and became a customer, as opposed to somebody who was just searching for information that, if they clicked on your pay-per-click ad, for example, actually cost you money, even though it didn't turn into a sale. So I'm certainly finding that is challenging, sorting through all that has kind of been of interest, but also difficult. I find that there are abundance of vendors who want to have your business in this area, and you get conflicting information, usually because they have some interest in the outcome. But really trying to sort through those challenges, relying on people who do not have a vested interest in the answer to be able to compare, results. And so those are really the things that I think I find the most challenging and yet very fascinating. I mean, I'm learning a lot around how the search engines work, and that's been fascinating. But again, it's a very critical part of how our business is presented to the consumer. That's moving also into the mobile web. So, customers will sometimes tell me, I found you on my BlackBerry. And so it's important to take that into consideration. So this whole area of internet marketing and presenting yourself in the electronic world is probably what I would identify as kind of the biggest challenge that we're working our way through right now.
Well, and I think that's a maybe not universal, but certainly very pervasive opportunity / conundrum for many business owners and executives. Everything, I won't repeat what you said because you did it very eloquently, but I think our listening audience probably can resonate with what you're talking about, going, yeah, because we're all in search of the ideal business model that, like the old Play-Doh machines, right, Dan? If I put in a hunk of Play-Doh on this side, and I put a star on the other side, and I squeeze it at this rate, out comes this little image, and, it's predictable, I can count on it, and for this amount of input, I get this amount of output, and in this area, there's so many choices, and like you said, the challenge of really determining the return on that investment, it's continuing to evolve, but it is challenging for business owners to figure out.
And I think we're still learning how it affects different products, so is it the same for storage as it is for some other area, and those answers just aren't there. It's more of an art than it is a science.
You started as a very young man, so when I say Dan, in your 39 years in the business world, I mean, I realize you started. You're probably employment laws. You were breaking employment laws back in the day, 39 years ago when you started. But previous to units, mobile storage, you had varying corporate roles and successful corporate roles. Rising to the top of the organizations, but could you discuss briefly with our audience, how does the experience of owning a startup business with your wife and your employees differ from the years of experience you had in the quote-unquote corporate world?
Well, I loved my corporate careers, and we certainly didn't get into this because I didn't like what I was doing. I absolutely enjoyed my career and was motivated more by the desire to control our own destiny and build value for the long term. Despite all of the news stories, I wasn't a recipient of any of the banking multi-million dollar bonuses. So, the personal ownership, it certainly is a 24/7 commitment. So, the intensity of the effort and the focus that it takes to build this business, particularly in these early years, is certainly very different from the corporate environment. When you want to go away for a weekend or you'd like to take a vacation, those opportunities just aren't there. There isn't somebody that's going to be able to take over and do what you do, at least at this point in our development. So, that's a very different experience than the corporate environment. I do love the diversity of the tasks that, I might be working in the warehouse driving truck one day or in the morning and stacking containers with the forklift. And then in the afternoon, I might be booking a reservation or even posting QuickBooks. And so that part of the variety of what I do each day is a lot of fun. And again, is different than that corporate experience where you may be much more relegated or spend many more hours in meetings and those kind of things. I do find that it's extremely important to make good decisions around the use of my time. It's easy to do the things that are kind of fun, but not necessarily the things that are necessary.
Yeah, that is a challenge, especially when you're in control, totally in control of your own calendar, and people aren't putting things on there for you. I appreciate that. Hey, if someone is, Dan, I appreciate the time we've had today to talk about you and your business, but if someone would like to learn more about Dan Leonard or Units Mobile Storage, what would you suggest they do?
Well, they certainly, I would invite them for a visit. Come by and see us in Lake Forest. We'd love to show them the operation, but you can also give us a call. Our phone number is 949-458-3595. That's 3595. And our website is unitsoc.com. And certainly take a look. And as I say, we certainly welcome people to come by and visit and see the operation. And we're more than happy to entertain some visitors as well.
Well, Dan, I appreciate the time you've put into preparing for the interview and certainly the time that you've spent with us here on Critical Mass, the radio show this afternoon. So Dan Leonard of Units Mobile Storage, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Bye. Doug and I believe that business owners and executives learn best from the experiences of their peers. I was excited to have Dan on as a relatively new business owner after years of being a successful executive in the corporate world, which we kind of talked about there at the end. You know, I believe you'll agree that Dan's experiences are relative to many of us. Some who are still new entrepreneurs can resonate because you're in that today. And those of us and business owners who've been around and owning their businesses for a while can maybe reflect back on the day when you were sort of in your first 2 years of getting the business off the ground. And for me, the critical thing there in the interview with Dan was also that you can write the best strategic plan that you may want to have and believe you have, but you've got to be able to respond to the realities of the economy and at the time that you're launching the business in order to survive those early years. And it certainly appears that Dan and Judy have been able to do that. And we wish them well as they continue to grow their franchise. I'm going to turn our attention now to Liz Goodgold, and she's a branding expert. And when I look at her website, and we'll talk more about that, you know, Liz is an author. She's a senior media correspondent. She's certainly a feisty redhead, as it says here. You might have seen her on CNN or NBC or ABC or CBS, as well as read about her in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, for God's sakes. You might even recognize Liz from her columns in Entrepreneur Magazine, which reaches over a million each month. So, without any further ado, let's bring Liz on to Critical Mass, the radio show. Hi, Liz.
Hi, guys. How are you?
I am fine, thank you. Let's get started. Liz, let's talk about your path to Redfire brand marketing, please.
Sure. I started my firm, it's actually called the Nuancing Group, and the book is called Redfire Branding, because I really wanted to focus on branding. I didn't want folks who just kept thinking, I do branding and it's a logo, because I really believe it's bigger than that and it's more than that.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that a great brand means every interaction counts. It means everything that your customer hears, sees, feels, smells, contributes to your brand impression. So your brand isn't really what you say it is, it's what other people believe it is. And so I really wanted to focus on the entire brand experience, not just on here's a beautiful logo and therefore that's your brand.
Mm-hmm. So how do you do that in your firm working with your clients?
Well, we really try to focus on what is the experience. How do you make the voicemail resonate, for example, versus the typical, hi, I'm not in, leave a message and I'll get back to you. How do you make your client feel welcome when they come to your office? We know, for example, that the research is really clear that if someone comes to your office and you give them, just like your mother told you, a cup of coffee or a glass of water, they will rate that experience higher than if you've given them nothing at all. And the reason, of course, is you've engaged another sense. You've given them the sense you have taste. So what it's really about is creating these memorable, positive experiences. So if they feel great in your office, it's a great reason to invite somebody to lunch. It's a great reason to have an office that actually smells good or has background music. All of these things contribute to having a great, positive brand experience.
Well, that's interesting you should say that, because I had two separate recent exposures to that. One was a documentary on Coca-Cola and how mm-hmm. they seek out those kind of moments. And the other one was McDonald's and how they really want to associate positive, early positive experiences are better. At least that's what I was, you know, kind of learning from that documentary. But at the end of the day, major brands, international billion-dollar brands like McDonald's and Coca-Cola are right on point with what you're talking about here today on our radio show.
Yeah, it's just really important to remember that every little thing can have a big impact. I think we all have an experience where we said, oh, that company was so rude, I'm never going to do business with them again. And a lot of times the victim, so to speak, is a phone company, right? We usually don't have great experiences. But the one interaction is enough to have us forever not interested in doing business with them.
So talk to the audience about, you know, of all the things that you've learned in your successful career, what is it that you're currently employing? Is there an overarching strategy or a life lesson, Liz, that you use in how you manage your firm, your brand, and your interactions with your clients today?
Well, I think there's a few things. I think the most important thing is to remember that branding is most important for small businesses, companies in the service sector, and people in the B2B, the business-to-business area. I think there's unfortunately this assumption that branding is just for these huge consumer companies, like the McDonald's, like the Coca-Cola. But the truth is, if you apply these principles to the small companies in the service sector, you, I think, get a greater return on your investment. And it's really great because the bar is so low. So few other competitors are doing a great job in this area that when you spend a little extra time and effort, you can reap a huge reward.
Well, I find that interesting because many times in preparing guests for our show, we talk about their point of differentiation, and many times service organizations believe their level of service is a point of differentiation, but yet your experience is that many times that's not the case?
It's not. I sort of look at it this way. If I ask you what a compelling piece or point of difference is in your company, and you say quality, value, and service, I say, great. Those are the three qualities necessary to be in business. Now tell me something unique. Quality and value and service means you have a company. It does not mean you have a brand.
You have the right to exist because...
Exactly. Yeah. So what I always try to do when it comes to branding is let's go deeper. Again, it could be my experience in Missouri, the show me state. You can't just walk around saying, I have great service. You have to show me the extraordinary. You have to prove to me the unbelievable. And that would mean the 110% money-back guarantee. It would mean that we are open 24/7. It will mean that we never, ever fail. What a concept. That's what it means. It's not just quality, value, and service. You have got to have a better and a more meaningful point of difference than that.
Excellent. Well, you know, I know we opened this interview by you suggesting and strongly believing, and I accept it, that the brand is more than getting a good logo done and a good name. But I know that you're also big about naming. In fact, you've named a number of companies, and even I hear a pharmaceutical drug. So what should our listeners know about naming as it relates to their business?
I think the two key things are, one, do not name the business after yourself. And two, do what I call the diligence, also known as the due diligence. So on the first point, I'm really one of the few naming companies and branding firms out there that say don't name the company after yourself. And the reason that I don't want the company named after yourself is I want you to be so successful that you're going to sell it for $1 billion. And if you're so successful and someone wants to buy it for $1 billion, you actually lose the value if it's named after yourself. So if my company is called Liz Goodgold and Associates, for example, first, no one believes I have any associates, right? They're like, of course there's no one else working with her. Second, if I go to sell it, I will lose forever the intellectual property rights to my own name. And this is what happened to famous Amos, known as Wally Amos. This is what happened to Freeman. This is what happened to Vidal Sassoon, who's suing to get his name rights back from Procter & Gamble. I don't think you should ever give up your name. And that's exactly what happens. Or look at the other side. What happens if something egregious happens and you become, oops, the Martha Stewart who lands in jail? These are not great things for your brand. I think it's important to be a little bit separate on the individual from the company. They can still manifest your company and be your brand personality. They just shouldn't be your brand name. And then again, okay, the second part of that is really the due diligence. Going and doing not just a simple Google search, but ready before you launch your name, go to USPTO.gov, United States Patent and Trademark Office.gov. It's my favorite four-letter word website because it's free. Just do some search to figure out who else has your name. I can't tell you how many clients have come to me because, oops, they have trademark infringement against them. Just because the domain name is available doesn't mean that you have rights to that name and can use it as a name without doing some proper trademark research.
And the best time to do that, obviously, Liz, is as you're forming and launching your firm so that you kind of do it right the first time. But many of our listening audience or business owners and executives of existing firms, what would you suggest they do to kind of test their name as it relates to their business and if it is an asset or not for them moving forward?
I think if you're down to maybe 3 to 5 names, one of my favorite things to do is really just call people. And I'm very different here. I'm not saying send somebody a survey. The reason why you can't use a survey for naming research is names are created based upon what people hear. So when I was naming a company, a division, for example, for Microsoft, we were looking at something called Shopwave as a potential name. Well, if I had put that in print and used a survey, I think the name would have come out fine. But instead, I did it the proper way and called people. And the first question I said to them was, what did you hear? Spell it back to me. Well, too many people spelled back to me Shockwave, a registered trademark of Macromedia, and therefore I knew I couldn't go that way because the trademark standard is confusingly similar. So it's really important on how your brand name sounds. Is it mellifluous? Does it flow? Can people spell it? And they have to be able to spell it today because what do we want people to do with it? We want them to Google you and to eventually get to your website. So that, to me, is probably the most important thing, is really do some testing, and this is my favorite. It's easy, it's not expensive, and you can get a maximum return by just picking up the phone and talking to a few folks.
Excellent. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That was worth the price of admission right there on this radio show, just if nothing else, but we're not done yet with Liz Goodgold. Can you talk to our audience, as I said, any of them are business owners and certainly top executives, but what are the few things, in your opinion, business owners can do and probably should do to fully reflect their brand at every opportunity within their business?
I think you should really take into effect you as the individual representing the brand. I gave a speech, for example, last week, and the woman told me she was representing toe socks. And, of course, my first question and the first thing I did was look down at her feet because I wanted her to be wearing her toe socks. And she goes, oh, no, I'm not wearing them. And, of course, to me, I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, what a sin. If you have a product, a service that you can wear, show, if you're a hairdresser, and I've spoken to tons of hairdressers, it always makes me intimidated because I know my hairstyle has to be perfect because their hairstyle is perfect. So if you have a product, I want you to wear it. One of my favorite ladies is a chef, and she, of course, comes to all these networking things, and she's always wearing her chef's jacket. Or I've seen people who do it, and they put a lapel pin, or they take a symbol from the former Senator Paul Simon from my state of Illinois, or they wear the red bow tie. What they really start doing is branding themselves by what they say, by what people see, by what they wear, by their colors, and these are things that make it clear, this is the business I'm in. And the great secret about branding is consistency. As I see you today and speak with you today is how I expect you to act and look tomorrow. So it's not saying that I expect you to be identical. Well, you wore a purple suit today. I want you in a purple suit tomorrow. No. If you are an accountant or a banker, I'm just saying I expect you to look very professional. And that's how you're going to look every time I see you. And when I don't, we get this inconsistency, and then we get confused. It's the exact same reason why if you see someone outside of the gym or in the gym, you don't recognize them because you're used to seeing them in the sweaty gym shirts and the goofy hair and the sweaty makeup. So to me, the most important thing is don't be afraid to be consistent and really wear your brand in any case, in any place that you can.
That really is also appropriate for solopreneurs, business owners, executives who are closely linked to the business. You know, I think that's part of what we talked a little bit with Dan Leonard earlier, but the aspect of social media and how that helps a company to promote itself it really is, from what I can see. Liz, and tell me your view on this, but the advent of social media, whichever set of tools the business owner decides to implement, really give them an opportunity to identify themselves in the marketplace with their clients and potential clients.
Right, but always in the same way. So even on my Facebook, LinkedIn, the only thing I ever talk about is branding. Even though I love wine, for example, you don't see me writing wine reviews, because I still have to retain my consistency, and as an expert, I only want to be known for one thing. And that's really the note of caution to everybody. Things that are on the web have their incredible half-life. So I only want my clients to talk about their area of expertise and nothing else.
So let's talk about that then. In this current economy, from your experience, Liz, can you talk with our audience about what marketing in this economy, what's working, and what is your recent experience? What may not be working for clients today?
I think the most important thing to do is to really take a page from some of the mass retailers out there. And this is what I call R&D, rip off and duplicate. How do you take great ideas that are working for other companies and adapt them to work for you? And what I mean here is figure out how you can add value versus just strictly discounting. So for a moment, let's compare and contrast what happened in really the heart of the recession and look at Saks. Saks Fifth Avenue was struggling so greatly that they took 70% off all of their merchandise. And what happened here is it taught the consumer that if you wait long enough, everything will go to deep discount. It also infuriated those companies and those brands that they sell that were very, very high end, because they've cultivated a high price, high image, and they didn't want it undermined by being 70% off. So that discount mentality for Saks really started a huge problem for them. Compare it to Neiman Marcus, and this I loved with Neiman, and this is an idea that we can steal, which is if you bought $500 or more worth of new women's clothing, you got free alterations. So the lesson here is I would rather do something that's a bonus or value add versus a discount. Buy a copy of my book and get an audio CD free is certainly a much better offer than just discounting the book. Is that making sense?
Yeah, so that's a perfect opening to let's talk about your book and give the audience a sense for what they would experience when they buy it and begin to read it.
Well, what they'll see in my book, Red Fire Branding, is not just the importance of branding, but it's the only one that tells you how to do it. How do you create the perception of being the expert? And I use examples from everybody. I take examples from chefs. I take examples from my favorite columnists like Walter Mossberg from the Wall Street Journal. How do you do things like Susie Orman? Because there's lessons to be learned. So I think if you try to take some of those lessons from everybody, from the Susie to the Donald Trump, you recognize there are some real tried and true branding strategies here that are revealed. How do I become the expert? Because my premise is simply this: people must remember you in order to do business with you. People must remember you in order to refer business to you. And most small businesses get their business from personal interaction and referrals. And so if you're not honing those two things, it's very hard to grow your small business.
If someone would like to learn more about you, the book, your practice, can you tell them what they should do, Liz? Where should they go?
Sure. They can go to redfirebranding.com. In fact, right there on the homepage, you can download for free my other favorite four-letter word, copy of the first chapter of the book. You can order the book there, and you can also listen. There's lots of audio and video, as well as past newsletters and articles, to really help you determine what's the best way to brand so that people remember you in order to do business with you.
Well, I think that's great, and I hope that a number of people rush to your website and take you up on the offer to download, get the book, get the audio, do what you said. I think we've covered a lot of ground in a very fast-paced interview this afternoon, Liz Goodgold, and I appreciate the time you spent with me on our radio show, Critical Mass. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was our second guest today on this installment of Critical Mass, the radio show, and I would strongly encourage you to spend a few minutes on redfirebranding.com, get to know more about Liz Goodgold and the work that she does and her newest book, which I guess I highly recommend because I believe she is an expert in her area and someone who clearly can help businesses to work on the areas that she is a specialist in. So another show's kind of in the books, as we say, and it's gone by very quickly. I want to thank Dan and Liz for joining me this afternoon, and for you, the listening audience, for being a part of the experience. My partner, Doug Gefeller, has the pleasure of hosting tomorrow's show, which is on at 4 o'clock here on octalkradio.net. So this is Rick Franzi saying, until we talk again, here's hoping that all your decisions move your business in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, only on octalkradio.net.